Welcome to SCOTUS Cast, Official Action and Federal Corruption Statutes Edition. Thank you for tuning in. On June 27, 2016, the Supreme Court decided McDonnell v. United States. Robert F. McDonnell, former governor of Virginia, was convicted in a jury trial of 11 counts of corruption. During the trial, prosecutors sought to prove that McDonnell and his wife Maureen, while he was governor, accepted money and lavish gifts in exchange for efforts to assist a Virginia company in securing state university testing of a dietary supplement the company had developed. The McDonald's, prosecutors argued, took official action on behalf of the company in exchange for money, campaign contributions, or other things of value, in violation of various federal statutes. Robert McDonnell was sentenced to 2 years in prison. The U.S. Court of Appeals for the Fourth Circuit affirmed McDonnell's conviction, but the U.S. Supreme Court granted his request to remain out of prison pending resolution of his case. The question before the Supreme Court was whether official action under the controlling fraud statutes is limited to exercising actual governmental power, threatening to exercise such power, or pressuring others to exercise such power, and whether the injury must be so instructed, or if not so limited, whether the Hobbs Act and Honest Services Fraud Statute are constitutional. By a vote of 8... By a vote of 8-0, the Supreme Court vacated the judgment of the Fourth Circuit and remanded the case. Chief Justice Roberts delivered the opinion for a unanimous court, holding that an official act is a decision or action on a question, matter, cause, suit, proceeding, or controversy. The question, matter, cause, suit, proceeding, or controversy must involve a formal exercise of governmental power that is similar in nature to a lawsuit before a court, a determination before an agency, or a hearing before a committee. It must also be something specific and focused. It must also be something specific and focused that is pending or may by law be brought before a public official. To qualify as an official act, the public official must make a decision or take an action on that question, matter, cause, suit, proceeding, or controversy, or agree to do so. Given that the lower courts applied too broad an interpretation of the term official act, the Chief Justice explained, the jury instructions were erroneous and it may have convicted Governor McDonnell for doubt. For conduct that was not unlawful. The court therefore vacated his convictions and remanded the case for a determination as to whether there is sufficient evidence for a jury to convict Governor McDonnell of committing or agreeing to commit an official act and thus allow for a new trial, or whether the charges against him must be dismissed. To discuss the case, we have Gregory G. Katsas. Who is partner at Jones Day. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular. Legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, Mr. Katsas.
Let me just begin with a disclaimer that my firm, Jones Day, represents Governor McDonnell and represented him in this case, so you can take my comments with a grain of salt if you'd like. So this case involves, obviously, the government's public corruption case, federal government's case against former Virginia Governor Bob McDonnell. He's prosecuted for honest services fraud and extortion under the Hobbs Act and through various preliminary negotiations and agreements. The parties essentially convert those charges into a bribery charge. And the essence of bribery is a quid pro quo exchange, which means that a public official takes something of value in return for, this is the key statutory term, official acts. And that statute is applied by the government to prosecute McDonnell, who took about $175,000 in gifts from a constituent who was promoting a particular dietary supplement called Anatablock, and who wanted government favors. He wanted Virginia to undertake studies of its medical efficacy in order to facilitate his efforts to get FDA approval for the supplement, and he wanted Virginia to cover the supplement in its health plan for state employees. So this guy Williams gives the governor, lavishes all these gifts on him, and in return the governor hosts events, invites him to the governor's mansion for a couple of events, sets up a couple of meetings between Williams and state officials who are responsible for either the studies or the funding or the state health plan, and he asks his subordinate officials to consider Anatablock. And that's it. No testimony that he ever pressured those officials, and none of the things that Williams ultimately wanted, the state money or the state studies or the state coverage in the health plan, ever came to fruition. The government prosecutes McDonald nonetheless, and they say none of that matters because he took official acts. They say that one form of official act is simply promoting economic development. They say, well, that's something the governor does in his official capacity, and he's promoting this particular product as part of his effort to promote economic development in Virginia. That's an official act. Another variant on this theory is that the lunches at the executive mansion and the calls to his subordinates and the meetings that he sets up, they themselves are official acts. So even if it were the case that the governor did nothing more than invite the constituent to a lunch at the governor's mansion in return for all of the gifts, on the government's theory, that's a criminal violation. And the court unanimously rejects that theory, throws away the McDonald conviction, and imposes some interesting and potentially significant limits on the concept of official act in the bribery statute. So the statute is somewhat broadly written. It requires action on a question matter, cause, suit, proceeding, or controversy pending before the official. Court says, well, a bunch of those words like cause or suit or proceeding or controversy look like they don't include things like meetings, and they do refer to some narrow, specific agenda item, is the court's phrase, something, according to the Chief Justice, that can be put on an agenda, tracked, and checked off. And then the other phrases that are broader, words like questions or matter, court invokes the canon that general words in a statutory list should be construed by reference to the narrower words. And so they say the first major point is that what's not an official act, meetings, arranging meetings, inviting people to a lunch, making calls to subordinates, none of those in and of themselves can be official acts. And then the related point on what can be official acts, court says, well, the matter has to be circumscribed, and then they define what that means in the context of this case. And they say that the decision of UVA researchers whether or not to study this particular supplement, that's an official act. The decision of grant-making officials in the Commonwealth whether to fund studies like that. That's an official act. And the decision of the Virginia officials who run the health plan whether or not to include this supplement in coverage, they say that's an official act. But they then say, well, did McDonnell act on those official acts? And they say, you know, you could support a conviction on the theory that either the defendant exerts pressure or provides advice, but not simply for setting up the meeting. So they say, well, if McDonnell makes the phone call and is effectively pressuring the officials to do the studies or spend the money or include the supplement in the health plan, that's a valid theory. That counts as official action, even though he's not the decision maker. Exerting pressure or giving advice is enough. That would support a criminal conviction. But the problem here is there's no way to know whether the jury rested on that permissible theory or on the government's more unbounded theory that even if there's no pressure and even if there's no advice, right, there's no nod, there's no wink, all the governor was doing was facilitating, putting this guy in touch with the government officials and then just leaving it to them to decide whether or not to give Williams what he wanted. Nonetheless, the meeting itself is the official act. And the court says, that's crazy. That can't be right. And so because the jury instructions didn't properly limit the term, the conviction gets set aside. Case gets remanded, and importantly, going forward, the court leaves open the question whether there's enough evidence under the legally proper narrower theory in order for the case to go forward. And then they say if the courts decide that there is enough evidence to support that narrower theory, then the government can re-prosecute under a narrower theory and under proper instructions. The rationale is pretty interesting. The major part of this court's analysis is that there have to be meaningful limits on public corruption statutes, in particular bribery, right? It's quid pro quo is the essence of bribery. If you think about it, the quid is what the government official accepts from constituents. And that is everything from campaign contributions to lunch. The quo, under the government's theory, is everything that public officials do, from arranging meetings to inviting people to an event. That's a ubiquitous quid and a ubiquitous quo, and then the only thing standing behind between public officials and criminal liability for bribery is the pro, the conclusion that the meeting was done in exchange for the gift or the lunch or the contribution. And the government never really had any answer to the point that that's not really a limitation at all. Juries can always infer the pro, and the court gives a couple of examples. It says, well, if a union official wants to approach the government in order to talk about closure of a plant, that shouldn't sort of trigger potential criminal liability if the union official has already made a campaign contribution. Or if the homeowner wants to approach the government to talk about why it took several days to restore power after a storm, that shouldn't potentially trigger criminal liability if the homeowners association has had the representative out to their annual ball game, and the government's only response to that was never really to deny that that would be criminal, but just to say, oh, well, juries won't convict and we won't prosecute. And the court's answer to that is to say, well, we don't construe criminal statutes based on the government's assurance that they will be restrained in the prosecutions they choose to bring. The other example the court might have given but didn't was just garden variety campaign fundraisers. You pay $100, you make a $100 campaign contribution, and in return you get a picture with the governor as part of an event at the executive mansion, or you pay $10,000 to the president's political action fund, and in return you get a night in the Lincoln bedroom. Things of that nature, where the pro, the exchange of the quid for the quo, is totally explicit and completely routine and part of how, for better or worse, politics is routinely done. The government's theory here would have criminalized all of that, and the court says no, that's very expansive. It raises First Amendment concerns along the lines of Citizens United. They didn't cite that case, but that's what they have in mind. And it raises federalism concerns to the extent you would have the national government dictating a very aggressive code of good government for states and municipalities.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUS Cast. For more episodes of SCOTUS Cast, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at www.federalistsociety.org/multimedia.